Headlines: Russia says Ukraine's NATO membership would have very negative consequences for European security as a key hurdle to Kiev's bid to join the alliance is lifted. Iran slams three European countries' plan to retain sanctions over its missile program, saying Tehran reserves the right to respond in kind. And no end in sight to Israeli atrocities against Palestinians. Occupation forces shoot another young man near the West Bank city of Ramallah. Hello and welcome to World News. I'm Marzia Hashimi. First story takes us to Moscow, which warns that Ukraine's NATO membership would have very negative consequences for European security. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov's remarks came ahead of the Alliance summit in Lithuania this week. He said Kiev's accession is a threat to which Russia would respond firmly. Meanwhile, the membership action plan, which was part of Ukraine's requirement to join NATO, has been lifted. Still, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg made it clear that Kiev will not become a member while the war is still going on. NATO has already given full backing to Ukraine by providing weaponry worth billions of dollars since the war began in February of 2022. Russia has time and again cited NATO's eastward expansion as the reason for its military operation in Ukraine. West, mainly the United States, Germany, France, and the UK have pledged numerous aid packages worth hundreds of billions of dollars to Ukraine. Many have warned that sending cluster munitions to Ukraine would further complicate the situation. Now, the question that arises is whether the world is ready for yet another direct conflict between the United States and Russia and its subsequent global consequences.
Crossing a new threshold in the type of weaponry supplied to Kiev, the United States on Friday announced it will provide the internationally banned cluster munitions to Ukraine.
In this environment, Ukraine has been requesting cluster munitions in order to defend its own sovereign territory. The cluster munitions that we would provide have dud rates far below what Russia is doing, is providing, not higher than 2.5%.
Sullivan said Ukraine would not be using the munitions in a foreign land. He added that Kiev has provided assurances in writing that the weapons will be used carefully to minimize risks to civilian lives. U.S. President Joe Biden defended the decision, saying it was because the efforts to defend against Russia had run out of ammunition. The move drew an instant reaction from the United Nations.
The Secretary General supports the Convention on Cluster Munitions, which, as you know, was adopted 15 years ago. And he wants countries to abide by the terms of that convention. And so, as a result, of course, he does not want there to be continued use of cluster munitions on the battlefield.
A number of key U.S. allies defied Washington's decision to supply cluster munitions to Kiev.
Well, the UK is signatory to a convention which prohibits the production or use of cluster munitions and discourages their use. We will continue to do our part to support Ukraine against Russia's illegal and unprovoked invasion.
Sunak made the comments in an address to reporters. Spain also followed suit, saying that certain weapons and bombs cannot be delivered under any circumstances. France reiterated its opposition to the use of the controversial weapon. Germany said the decision goes against the Convention of Cluster Munitions that bans such weapons on the battlefield. Neither the United States nor Ukraine is party to the pact. Russia strongly condemned the move. In a statement, Russian Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova said it is an act of desperation and shows weakness against the backdrop of the failure of the much-touted Ukrainian counteroffensive. Zakharova added the decision showed the aggressive anti-Russian course taken by the U.S., which is aimed at prolonging the conflict in Ukraine as much as possible. Tehran also lambasted the move. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said the U.S. decision to send cluster bombs to Ukraine shows Washington's determination to perpetuate and further complicate the war in Ukraine. Inside the U.S., congressional Democrats raised concerns over the move. Senators Barbara Lee and Tim Kaine said Washington's decision to set cluster bombs to Ukraine could inspire other countries to sidestep an international convention barring such munitions.
Washington's decision to send internationally banned cluster munitions to Kiev has met with backlash from key allies of the U.S. and created division among NATO members. Russia has also taken a jab at the U.S.'s decision, an act of desperation which signals its weakness.
Supplying Kiev with cluster munitions comes as the armaments are highly controversial weapons that typically release large number of smaller bomblets, which can kill indiscriminately over a wide area. Those that go undetonated potentially endanger civilians for years to come. Cluster munitions are banned by over 100 countries. The supply of such weapons bring Washington's total aid to Ukraine to more than $40 billion since the Ukraine war began in February 2022. In total, the United States and its allies have provided Ukraine with numerous military aid packages worth hundreds of billions of dollars. The military support for Ukraine includes the delivery of heavy and light military weapons and ammunition, as well as non-lethal material military aid. Those weapons are sent to Kiev regardless of the fact that Russia has time and again warned that such a trend would only prolong the conflict and cause more destruction on both sides. But Ukraine allies seem to be more concerned about Kiev's failure on the battlefield and have consequently kept pumping Kiev full of advanced weapons. Those weapons not only have failed to prevent the conflict from getting exacerbated, but instead they have led to even more escalation on both sides. With Ukraine's so-called counteroffensive now it's in second months, Kiev has announced gains during its attacks on Russian forces. Ukraine says a number of villages have been liberated thanks to its counteroffensive. Russia, in the meantime, has targeted positions belonging to Ukraine using missiles, causing death and destruction in several areas. All in all, by supplying Ukraine with the internationally banned cluster munitions, the United States is taking two huge risks. One is simply prolonging the war, as Russia has numerously reiterated. And two is possibly getting Washington involved in the conflict. And that's what many throughout the globe prefer not to picture, given its potential global catastrophic consequences.
And moving on to other news this hour, Tehran slams the joint statement by the UK, Germany, and France on retaining sanctions on all exports of military equipment by Iran over its missile program. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said the move is unconstructive and Tehran reserves the right to respond in kind. Earlier, the three European countries said they will maintain the sanctions, allegedly based on the UN Security Council's resolution 2231. Now, the measures are due to expire in October based on the sunset provisions in the resolution. Elsewhere in his remarks, Kanani reiterated using all available means to secure national rights with regard to peaceful nuclear technology. He said indirect discussions are underway with parties to the 2015 nuclear deal. Meanwhile, Iran says Canada, Sweden, Ukraine, and Britain are pursuing their political objectives by referring an accidental downing of a Ukrainian plane to the International Court of Justice. In a statement, the foreign ministry accused the four Western countries of failing to make good on their own stated commitment to resolve the issue through diplomatic channels. The ministry said Iran had formed an independent technical group right after the incident and took the necessary actions to investigate the tragic occurrence. As the statement added, Iran immediately issued visas to experts from Ukraine and Canada to visit the site of the accident and to also prepare. They also prepared a report with the cooperation of foreign experts. On Wednesday, Canada, Sweden, Ukraine, and Britain brought a legal case against Iran at the top UN court. They accused the Islamic Republic of failing to take the necessary measures to prevent the downing of the plane, which killed all 176 people on board in January of 2020. Well, journalist and political commentator Said Mohsen Abbas says the International Criminal Court is a biased and Eurocentric institution.
This is, first of all, part of a context of Iranophobia and really basically trying to checkmate Iran in some way, shape, or form. Now, the other thing is, of course, the ICC is an important organization to analyze, the International Criminal Court as well, which I'll come on to. But first of all, if all of this is so heartfelt from these nations, then they ought really to open the book on the Iran Air Flight 655, which was a passenger flight, we all know, heading from Tehran to Dubai, that was shot down by two MR surface-to-air missiles that were fired by who? The USS Vincennes, a guided missile cruiser of the US Navy. Nobody was ever brought to book over that, and I think the Americans haven't even had the courtesy to apologize for the hundreds of lives that were lost there. So that deals with hypocrisy. The second issue is really who are they taking this complaint to? The International Criminal Court has already been highlighted by certainly the African nations as an institution which has a bias, has a Eurocentricism about it. Has a racist track record because in up to 2016 it only selected more or less 9 African nations for whatever actions, legal actions that they took part in.
Well, Israeli forces have killed yet another Palestinian in the occupied West Bank. The Palestinian man was shot dead near Deir Nathem in the Ramallah area. Regime troops opened fire on 33-year-old Bilal Qada over an alleged grenade attack on an Israeli settlement. The Ramallah area has been a flashpoint area over the past months amid stepped-up Israeli violence across the West Bank. The regime has killed nearly 200 Palestinians in shootings and raids in the region since the beginning of this year. One of the most high-profile was the deadly aerial and ground attacks on the Jenin refugee camp last week. It left 12 Palestinians dead. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Candiel, says the incident shows Palestinians are adhering to the resistance despite the Israeli crackdown.
It's a clear message that even if the Israelis continued their aggression and their crimes, but at the same time, Palestinians insist that they would always be adherent to resistance and that the struggle will continue until the Israeli occupation comes to an end. When it comes to the ensuring the safety of the Israeli settlers, Israeli Minister Ben-Gvir knows very well that what's important for the Israeli society to hear is that they make sure the most important thing is the safety and security of the settlers. There had been orders for the military establishment that all Israeli soldiers, they have the green light to use their weapons in order to shoot and kill Palestinians, even if they do not feel imminent threat from the Palestinians. It's the same thing when we speak about the settlers. Settlers these days are fully armed. They have weapons, even if we speak about the children from the settlers' community. All of them have weapons. They know that they would not be dragged to the military courts, and they would not be held accountable for even killing Palestinians mistakenly.
Meanwhile, Israel's far-right minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir, has announced that the regime's forces will no longer seize guns from settlers who shoot Palestinians in the occupied territories. Ben-Gvir's announcement comes at a time when Palestinians have been experiencing brutal attacks by settlers and regime forces almost on a daily basis. The new decision is aimed at encouraging settlers to carry weapons and to use them against Palestinians in the wake of anti-Israeli operations. It marks a shift in Israel's policy on settlers' crimes. Previously, settlers' guns were confiscated if they shot at Palestinians. The new policy shift comes as the occupied territories have witnessed ramped-up violence against Palestinians since the formation of a new far-right coalition cabinet under Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Meanwhile, 9 years have passed since Israel's 50-day onslaught on the Gaza Strip, and still no justice for the victims. Israeli war criminals continue to roam free as Palestinians continue to suffer. Ashraf Shannon brings us more.
In July 2014, Israeli forces waged an all-out war against the Gaza Strip that lasted for 50 days. During the course of the onslaught, Israeli forces killed some 2,200 people, including hundreds of innocent women and children. A further 11,000 were wounded. According to human rights organizations, the Israeli attacks on Palestinians during the 2014 war were systematic and deliberate, with disproportionate and excessive force used against civilians. Rights groups demand that Israeli war criminals be brought to justice.
9 years ago, Israel waged an all-out war in Gaza and committed war crimes. Israel used a tactic of bombing buildings with civilians inside and also attacked United Nations shelters. We have documented the killings and injuring of Palestinian civilians and the mass destruction of civilian infrastructure. We call on international legal bodies, including the International Criminal Court, to investigate the Israeli crimes and to hold the perpetrators accountable.
The 2014 war also saw the bombardment of thousands of homes and the displacement of around 500,000 people. The Israeli regime has consistently failed to make any attempt to hold individuals at any level responsible for the war crimes and crimes against humanity.
I was injured and my 60-year-old son was killed. 3 of my cousins were also killed. My family, along with 10 other families, were hiding in the basement when it was hit by an Israeli rocket.
During the 2014 war, the Israeli regime displayed callous indifference, launching attacks on family homes in the densely populated coastal strip. This is while the United States and other Western countries provided billions of dollars worth of military aid to the Israeli regime during and after the 2014 onslaught on Gaza.
The Israeli regime has shown zero accountability for the crimes perpetrated by its troops due to the protection it enjoys from the international community, especially from the United States. These actions encourage Israel to commit more crimes against the Palestinian people.
Despite Israel's grave violations of international law, Palestinians continue to suffer due to international apathy.
Experts say that the Israeli regime has committed acts that amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity in the Gaza Strip since 2008. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
And now to North Korea, which has warned of a decisive response should the U.S. military enter its economic zone again. Kim Yoo-sung, the powerful sister of the leader, Kim Jong-un, made this statement, the threat in a statement on Monday. Now, that after Pyongyang claimed a U.S. reconnaissance plane recently violated its airspace near the East Coast. The North also denounced what it called a move by Washington to introduce a nuclear-powered ballistic missile submarine to waters near the Korean Peninsula. Pyongyang says such actions create a situation that would bring a nuclear conflict closer to reality. Now, the North regards Washington's deployment of strategic nuclear assets to the Korean Peninsula as a blatant nuclear blackmail against North Korea and regional countries and a grave threat to peace. Well, South Koreans have taken to the streets of the capital Seoul to protest against Japan's plan to release contaminated water from the Fukushima nuclear plant into the Pacific Ocean. IAEA Chief Rafael Grossi has traveled to the South Korean capital to reassure officials and opposition there that the water release will not harm humans or the environment.
That brings us to the end of this World News Bulletin. Thank you all so much for staying with us.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Iran Sat or Bat 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Limelight. Experts predicted a looming hunger cliff in the United States back in March, and they were right. According to new data, food insecurity in the United States reaches its highest number since December 2020. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Truthout noted, back in March, as expanded pandemic-era supplemental nutrition assistance program benefits expired, food insecurity experts were concerned that the United States was racing towards a looming hunger cliff. Now it seems that their predictions were correct, according to new data from the Census Bureau. As the Alliance to End Hunger wrote in a June 30 email, 26.5 million Americans reported food insecurity as of June 19th, according to the Census Bureau's Household Pulse Survey, the most thus far in 2023 and the highest number since December 2020. During the pandemic, SNAP benefits were essentially supercharged as Americans faced furloughs, unemployment, and widespread supply chain disruptions, which had already thrown the grocery buying experience into disarray, in a surge that was categorized as an unprecedented expansion by the New York Times. Jason D. Parrell, more than 6 million people enrolled for food stamps during the first 3 months of the pandemic. While SNAP benefits typically vary based on a recipient's income, during the temporary congressional expansion, recipients were offered the maximum aid available for their household size. However, those benefits were cut months early as part of a bipartisan compromise surrounding a program to provide grocery benefits to replace school meals for low-income children. At the time, the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, a nonpartisan research and policy institute, reported that the average SNAP recipient would receive at least $90 less per month. The Center reported some households who, under regular SNAP rules, receive low benefits because they have somewhat higher but still modest incomes will see reductions of $250 a month or more. The average person will receive about $90 a month less in SNAP benefits. In a March statement to Sloan Food, Eric Mitchell, the executive director of the Alliance to End Hunger, wrote that There is never a good time to make it harder for people to buy food. But ending benefits now comes at a particularly bad time. Mitchell said, with inflation and food prices still near record levels, it is still far too expensive for many Americans across the country to put food on the table. Without these extra dollars, millions of people will be at risk of hunger. He continued, writing that the expanded benefits were a lifesaver for many individuals and families as jobs disappeared and the economy grinded to a halt. In the ensuing months, the SNAP program has undergone some permanent changes, the most notable being that the age bracket for people who must meet work requirements in order to participate in the program was expanded. As Salon Food reported in June, this was one of the several concessions made by Democrats as part of a deal to raise the debt ceiling, which the country needed to do later this year to avoid a default crisis. Prior to the pandemic, people younger than 50 who met certain requirements had to volunteer, work, or receive job training for 80 hours a month in order to receive regular assistance. Now, as part of the new budget cuts package, recipients are required to work until the age of 55. According to the Center for Public Integrity, the new stipulations also make it harder for states to waive those work rules in states. Yet after weeks of debate, the new budget cuts package now raises the age of recipients required to work to 55, and according to the Center for Public Integrity, makes it harder for states to waive work rules in areas with high unemployment. Notable exceptions include if someone is experiencing homelessness, is a military veteran, or if they are a youth aged 18 to 24 who has aged out of the foster care system. Currently, there are also two bills under review that would prevent current SNAP recipients from buying junk food classified as candy, ice cream, and prepared desserts such as cakes, pies, cookies, or similar products with their benefits. Several hunger experts have raised concern at both developments, especially in light of the newest food insecurity numbers. According to the Center on Budget Policies and Priorities, the expansion of working age would take food assistance away from large numbers of people, including many who have serious barriers to employment, as well as others who are working or should be exempt but are caught up in red tape. Meanwhile, a spokesperson from the Agriculture Department told Spectrum News that further monitoring of what SNAP recipients purchase with their benefits would increase program cost and complexity and undermine the dignity of millions of Americans by assuming that low-income Americans are unable to make decisions that are best for themselves and their families. According to NBC News, with food prices up 6.7% compared to this time last year, the United States service members and their families experience food insecurity at higher rates than the general public. Also, Guardian had reported food insecurity remains stubbornly high in the United States. According to Guardian, 1 in 10 American households struggled to feed their families last year, with more than 5 million families missing meals and cutting portions due to poverty, new government research has revealed.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Let me go to an advice from Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salatu wa salam. One of the early books that we have is a book by the name of Basharatul Mustafa li Shi'at al-Murtaza. You know, the good news or tidings of the Prophet for the Shias of Ali. And in there, the author basically going with his sanad goes all the way to Muhammad bin Ishaq, who narrates from Sa'id bin Zayd bin Artad. Sa'id is talking to Kumail bin Ziyad. So apparently Sa'id has not seen Amir al-Mu'mineen. He is the generation after, Tabi'een as we call them. And so he says, I met Kumail and I asked him about the fazilat, you know, of Amir al-Mu'mineen, that if you can describe something. And Kumail says to him, أَلَا أُخْبِرُكَ بِوَصِيَّةٍ أَوْصَانِي بِهَا يَوْمًا هِيَ خَيْرٌ لَكَ مِنَ الدُّنْيَا بِمَا فِيهَا. He says, why don't I narrate to you an advice that he gave me one day, and that will be better than the whole world and what is in it for you. And so he talked about, you know, the wasiyyat, that the advice that Ali had given. And in one part he says that Amir al-Mu'mineen said, Ya Kumail, laysa shan an tusalli wa tasumu wa tatasaddaq. It's a very powerful statement. He says, you know, namaz, you know, praying and fasting and giving charity is not everything. You know, it has to be done in a proper way. So just the simple act of doing namaz, the simple act of just, you know, being hungry and thirsty for a whole day in fasting, or just giving away the sadaqah by itself, he says this is not sufficient. Ash-sha'an means, you know, you have to see what is the soul of it. Laysa shan. You don't have to just look at the appearance of what you're doing. You have to see the soul of what you are doing. Then he says, innama shan an takuna salat. He says, if you look at the soul of the salat, it should be done biqalbin naqi, with a pure heart. وَعَمَلٍ عِنْدَ اللَّهَ مَرْضِي, and an action which will be pleasing to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It should be based on khushu, the sense of humility, that we are in the presence of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. He says that is reflected by fulfilling the requirements of doing the ruku properly. You know, not just going there and get over with it. No. He says, do the ruku in the proper way. Do the sajda in the proper way. And whatever is between that. And so, and then he says, Ya Kumail, not only that you do it in the proper way. This is where I'm coming to the theme. Ya Kumail, unzur fima tusalli. See that when you are praying to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the clothings in which you are praying, look at it. So it's not only making sure the wudu is right. You know, I done the timing is right, the qira'at is right, the actions are right. He says, look at the dress in which you are doing the prayers. In lam yakun min wajhihi wa hillihi, if it is not from the right sources, it's not halal, fala qabool. That salat will not be accepted. Why he says, Ya Kumail, inna al-lisan yabuhu min al-qalb wal-qalb yaqumu bil-ghada. Because whatever you say in salat is reflection of what is in your soul, and your soul is in a way partially developed by the food that you eat. فَانْزُرْ فِي مَا تُغَذِّي قَلْبَكَ وَجِسْمَكَ. See what you are feeding to your soul and your body. فَإِنْ لَمْ يَكُنْ ذَلِكَ حَلَالًا. If it is not halal, لَمْ يَقْبَلُ اللَّهُ تَصْبِيهُكَ وَلَا شُكْرَكَ. Allah will not accept your praise and your shukr. And so this is where we see, and then he goes on to say, you know, the importance of what we call, you know, halal income. Ya Kumail, ifham wa'alam. O Kumail, understand this, and you should know. Anna la nurakhisu fi tarki ada'i al-amanat li-ahadin min al-khalq. He says, we have never ever allowed anyone to disregard the trust which has been given to them. You know, min al-khalq, anyone, we have not given any blank check to anyone. If an amanat is given to you in trust, you have to make sure you convey that amanat to the rightful owner. فَمَنْ رُوِيَ عَنِّي فِي ذَلِكَ رُقْصَةً فَقَدْ أَبْطَلَ وَعَثِمَ وَجَزَاهُ النَّارِ بِمَا كَذَبَ. Whoever attributes to me a statement that I have allowed this, then he says, remember, this is batil, this is a sinful act that they are doing, and their end would be in the fire of Jahannam because of their lie they are attributing to me. أُقْسِمُ, I swear by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, لَسَمِعْتُ رَسُولَ اللَّهِ صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَآلِهِ وَسَلَّمْ Ali says, I heard the Prophet saying to me, قَبْلَ وَفَاتِهِ بِسَاعَةٍ, just an hour before he passed away, he told me, مِرَارًا ثَلَاثًا, three times he told me, يَا عَبَ الْحَسَنْ أَدِّ الْأَمَانَ إِلَى الْبَرِّ وَالْفَاجِرِ. You know, convey the amanat back, give the amanat and the trust which is with you, whether that person is a good person or a sinful person. You don't judge that in that matter, because it doesn't belong to you, it belongs to that person. And he says, فِيمَا قَلَّ وَجَلَّ. He says, whether it is a small, you know, item, or it is more valuable. And he gives the example, فِي الْخَيْتِ وَالْمِخْيَةِ. Even if it is a thread and a needle, how much would that be? A thread and a needle, maybe a few cents. He says, even if it's as small an item like the thread and the needle, make sure that the amanat is conveyed. And this is where we have to realize that, you know, some of the rulings that we have, even in salat, we are told again and again, make sure that the water is mubah. These are not only items to be there in the textbooks of our madrasa for the children. We have to think about it. You know, the source of income, the ownership that we have, you know, or the right of using that property that we have. Even when it comes to this space where you are doing the wudu, for example, the dress in which you pray, the place where you are doing the salat, all should be mubah. These are very simple rulings that we have, we will be learned. And if that we keep that in mind, that should have an impact on the decisions that we make about our sources of income.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Azim Alimun Halim Hakimun Matin. Oh.
قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صل عليه.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Special counsel investigations of former U.S. President Donald Trump have cost over $9 million in just 5 months. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The U.S. national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. Special counsel Jack Smith's two investigations of former President Donald Trump have cost more than $9 million in the first 5 months after Jack Smith was tapped in November of 2022 by Attorney General Merrick Garland to oversee the Justice Department's ongoing Trump-related investigations, according to expenditure statements released on Friday, 7th of July. Jack Smith is investigating efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election and Donald Trump's alleged mishandling of classified White House records after he left office. When Smith took over, both probes were already in progress, and in June, prosecutors secured an indictment against Donald Trump and his longtime aide, Walt Noether, for an alleged scheme regarding the retention of national defense information and obstruction of federal investigations. Donald Trump pleaded not guilty in Florida last month to 37 counts against him, which include 31 charges of illegally holding on to sensitive government records. And Walt Noether entered a non-guilty plea on Thursday after weeks of delays. Walt Noether, Donald Trump's one-time White House valet, is accused of working with the former president to move and hide boxes of documents with classified markings inside Mar-a-Lago and lying to investigators about his knowledge of the records. In all, Jack Smith's two investigations directly cost $5,428,000 in funding from the Justice Department's permanent indefinite funding for independent counsel probes, as prescribed by congressionally authorized statute between 18th of November 2022 and 31st of March 2023. This included more than $2.6 million for personal compensation and benefits, according to the disclosure, and approximately $1.8 million for contractual services like litigation and information technology support. Another $3.8 million was spent on FBI and U.S. Marshals Service personnel connected to the two Jack Smith probes for investigative matters and protective details. While not required to disclose such expenses in the reports, they were included in Friday's statements. Since his appointment, the special counsel Jack Smith has spoken publicly just once after indicting the former president in the Southern District of Florida in June. Our laws that protect national defense information are critical to the safety and security of the United States, and they must be enforced. Jack Smith said at the time, "We have one set of laws in this country, and they apply to everyone." Former President Donald Trump has bashed the probe as politically motivated and maintained he did nothing wrong. Jack Smith's team of prosecutors is also investigating the events surrounding the 6th of January 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol and efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election. Grand juries are convened in Washington, D.C. to hear evidence, and in recent weeks, investigators have met with numerous witnesses, including Donald Trump's attorney, Rudy Giuliani. Investigators have examined a number of leads in the matter and are focused on an alleged fake electoral scheme in which supporters of the former president worked to overturn the certification of the Electoral College votes via an alternate group of swing state representatives pledging their support to Donald Trump, according to sources familiar with the probe. State officials from Arizona, Nevada, and Georgia have spoken with investigators or complied with subpoenas for records in recent months. The expense statements were released as part of a biannual submission by the Justice Department to Congress detailing the cost of ongoing special counsel probes to Congress. The disclosure also contained information related to the investigation of Special Counsel Robert Hur, who was appointed by Merrick Garland in January to take over the investigation into President Joe Biden's retention of classified documents from his time as vice president and senator, and former special counsel John Durham, who earlier this year completed his probe into the origins of the Russia investigation. According to the report, Robert Hur's investigation cost more than $1.1 million between 12th of January 2023 and 31st of March 2023, as did the final stages of John Durham's probe from 1st of October 2022 to 31st of March 2023. CBS News first reported that roughly 10 documents marked classified were discovered by Joe Biden's personal lawyers at his vice presidential office at the Penn Biden Center for Diplomacy and Global Engagement on 2nd of November 2022, and these documents were turned over to the National Archives and Records Administration. The website metro.co.uk has also covered the same story and tells us more. Investigations into former President Donald Trump's alleged classified documents mishandling and efforts to overturn the 2020 election results have cost more than $9 million in just 5 months. The Office of Special Counsel Jack Smith, who is overseeing the probe, spent over $5.4 million on employee salaries, on travel, rent, and supplies from November of 2022 to end of March 2023, according to a Justice Department statement of expenditures released on Friday, 7th of July. Justice Department agencies spent an additional $3.8 million to support Jack Smith, the budget summary shows. That includes the cost of protective details for the special counsel Jack Smith when warranted. The statement of expenditures was disclosed a few weeks after Donald Trump pleaded not guilty to 37 felony charges around his alleged mishandling of classified documents, and a day after his valet, Walt Nota, pleaded not guilty to 6 charges relating to him allegedly assisting Donald Trump in hiding classified records at Mar-a-Lago. While the Justice Department's investigations into Donald Trump have cost American taxpayers millions of dollars, Donald Trump's indictment in the classified documents case has boosted his 2024 presidential campaign. Donald Trump, on the day after he was criminally charged at a Miami federal courthouse, said the indictment hoax raised him $6.6 million. The former president said that $2.1 million that was donated at his Bedminster Golf Club, where he delivered a speech hours after his arraignment. The other $4.5 million came from digital fundraising. The Justice Department on Friday, 7th of July, also released cost summaries of investigations by two other special counsels. Special Counsel John Durham, who was appointed to investigate the FBI's probe of Donald Trump and the Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election, spent $1.1 million from October to March, winding down his inquiry. John Durham's investigation has cost a total of about $7.6 million since he was tasked in 2020 during the Trump administration.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Ayatollah Khamenei elaborates on six key points of Imam Khomeini's testament, June 4, 2018. If a nation wants to rid itself of the pressures from aggressors, and today the bullying of the U.S., it must stand up to the U.S. with full strength and determination. Just take a look at the behavior of American statement, the U.S. president and his cabinet members, and observe their rhetoric. Their style of speech is similar to that of psychopathic personalities. They make threats. They order assassinations. They slander. They helplessly beg for assistance. They attack the stability and security for other nations. They horse around like a bunch of lunatics. Their behavior is not characteristics of the logical, wise politicians. Of course, this behavior is due in large part to the reflection of American failure in different parts of the world. Their failure in Afghanistan and Iraq. They entered Iraq and Afghanistan with the promise of freedom, democracy, and human rights.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Today, after the passage of several years, the situation in these two countries is so severe that no nation would want to be in the same situation. Insecurity, power, increasing domination of arrogant power, jeopardizing their national interest, disregarding the right of the people, and the subsequent total failure in achieving the goals they had once announced, or the interior motives they had not announced, are very prevalent there. These failures are reflected in the behavior of American politicians and in their discord, disagreement, and decisions. That is the way the global bullies behave. What should one do to confront this bullying? The imam's advice was to resist. Fortunately, today all the political groups in the country express their loyalty to the path of the imam. This is an auspicious phenomenon. This was not the case in some eras after the revolution. There were some political movements that openly talked about turning their backs on the imam's path. Fortunately, today, political groups in our country talk about their inclination towards the thoughts and path of the imam. One of the most prominent points of the imam's path, which is reflected in his testament and all his remarks, is the need for determined resistance against covetous, arrogant power.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.